Welcome to this episode of Money Matters TV. I'm Kelly Stewart, the founder of The Positive Business. I help business leaders understand the social business paradigm, and I teach a strategic planning framework that they can use to pull that into their organizations. And today I'm here with Patricia Dunn. She is Senior Vice President at Merrill Lynch Wealth Management, and she has been an industry pro for 40 years. And has certainly seen a lot of changes in the industry, some of which we're going to talk about today. So welcome, Pat. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Excellent. I'm happy to have you here today. So let's talk about some of your work over the last 40 years. I know you've worked with families and individuals and in a very real way, helping to make the world a better place through the work that you do. So what can you tell us today about the industry and how that's changing?
Great question. Because for over 40 years, I have watched this industry evolve to meet client needs. Mm. And those that evolution went into warp speed back in 2010.
Sure.
Why 2010? Well, we had just come off of two bear markets in a single decade. And that rattled investors down to their core. Mm. Now, prior to this, the industry standard for financial advisors to give advice was suitability. Our advice had to be suitable. Hmm. After that, the investing public wanted more. They demanded more. Mm-hmm. They wanted the advice to not just be suitable, but to be appropriate to their circumstances.
Okay.
So in 2017, the Department of Labor came out with a new standard for retirement assets only. That's because the Department of Labor covers retirement assets,
okay.
IRAs, 401ks, and it was upgraded from suitability to fiduciary,
okay,
which meant that the advice had to be in the best interest of the client.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we ended up with two standards. Because personal investments fall under the SEC. And that was still under suitability.
Okay.
So how can you have two standards?
Took the question right out of my mouth.
Well, apparently the powers that be saw this as a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And the law was struck down in 2018.
Okay.
Now, I'm hoping that this will give the industry time.
Right.
Because only certain firms were set up to adhere to the fiduciary standard.
Okay.
Not everybody was.
Hmm.
And now that the law has been struck down, it gives the firms more time to gear up.
Sure.
Because I think it'll be back because it is in the best interest of the investing public.
Right.
It's good for business. Mm-hmm. It's good for investors.
Sure. It would help to stabilize risk, not being in the financial industry myself, but I would assume that's a big concern, the risk around that. And as an investor, you'll have a better idea of what you're getting into.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, you work with companies. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen changes. What kind of changes for the good have you seen?
Sure. So many, which is, I'm thrilled to be able to say that, right? But in thinking about what you were talking about, there's a level of transparency in what you were describing that I think applies to, I think, any business that is really out there that is genuinely purpose-driven to do good, which is the realm in which I operate. They're very comfortable being transparent about what they do and how they do it and the impact, the good impact, that they're making on their teams. On society, you know, within society in general and for the planet. And I think that's really important today because people don't often know who to trust in this kind of era of instant and persistent news. And I think that the companies that really can be more transparent are understanding it's a way of earning trust, and that can only help them.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Right. So I'm curious then, what do you think will happen? You mentioned that not all of the companies are there. You think they will gear up. Is there a path forward for them? Do you think that they're anxious to jump onto that path?
I wouldn't go so far as to say anxious because the wheels of progress do move slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that every company tries to evolve to meet client demand.
Right.
And the demand is, as you said, they want transparency between the level of service received and the price paid for it. And ultimately, I think all firms will offer one, two, three, four, or five of the five different levels of service that are going to come out of this.
Okay.
Now, not every firm is set up to offer all five.
Right.
Mine is, but not everyone is.
Good.
But that's okay. You could have one firm that offers levels one and two, and another one that does three and four.
Room for everyone.
Room for everyone.
Sure.
But when we can get to that point where people know what they're getting for what they're paying for it, then we will truly be on the fiduciary standard.
Right. Meeting expectations, I think that's really so important. And understanding how expectations have changed.
Yes.
You know, I think that's super important. I know I see it a lot, too, in industries that are trying to change, as you said, evolve, meet new expectations. And I think there are a few drivers that may also be affecting your industry, but there is a real desire, and I think it's among multiple generations, although I think the millennial generation has kind of led this charge, that there's a real demand or desire to make a social impact.
Yes.
And so that includes the donation, which is good and wonderful, and it takes that a step beyond to know, in addition to the donation, how are we making a difference?
Right.
Right? And I think that's why you're seeing more socially responsible business models, like the buy one, donate one. And I think that's a driver of some of these businesses that are trying to do good, absent of regulations, right? You know, not all industries are affected by the regulations that certainly the financial services industry has. And then there's proof that doing good works. You know, the longitudinal financial research is out, and it shows that companies that really have a strong ESG initiative, environmental, social governance, right, that they do well over the long term financially. And I think it's something like in the United States now, assets that are invested in companies with strong ESG now account for like 25% of all the assets invested and professionally managed, which I just think is wonderful. And then there are things like the professional development market. That's cresting at about $10 billion. So as more people invest in themselves and want to bring out their best selves, they want to work for companies that are aligned to their values. And they want to know what those values are, which loops back to the transparency. I think the complexity and the breadth and depth of changes and challenges that businesses fit today are just so different from anything we could have possibly imagined 10 years ago, let alone 25 or 30 years ago. And I think that really requires a different mindset, that business leaders who are doing good, they kind of have that mindset. They realize they're not going to get very far by asking what's in it for me, the company, you know. They have to have a different mindset, like what's in it for us and how can we work for the benefit of all of the people essential to our success. So I think that those are some of the main drivers.
And I've seen it. You'd be amazed at the number of people who call me and ask me for socially responsible investing strategies.
You're making my heart sing.
And what we found is you do the research, and companies that do right actually perform better than those that don't.
Absolutely.
Which has led to this whole field. And
Well, again, going back to the risk, I think, too, when you consider the vast and viral nature of social media and citizen journalism, we live in a transparent world, right?
Yes,
so
we do.
So it behooves the companies to acknowledge that and kind of rewire their systems to operate in a transparent marketplace. So things that were seemingly insignificant now through that video that goes, you know, across the internet in 20 minutes pose a real risk and sometimes a very expensive risk for companies. So I think it is in their best interest to do good. Then you can't get caught doing anything bad, you know?
That's right.
So it helps a lot like that. But great conversation. Great conversation. And I know we have a question today, and this is from Ann Conwell of Winwood. And she asks, I've heard of robo-advice, generic advice, and personalized advice. Can you explain the differences?
Great question, and it leads right into the conversation we just had. because this is the heart and soul of the transparency between the level of service received mm-hmm. and the price paid for it. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that there were five levels.
Right.
Robo-advice is actually level number two.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
And robo, Anne, is as the name implies, robo, robot. It is between the investor and the computer. Mm-hmm. The investor is asked to answer a series of questions, and by the answers given, the computer, not a human being, the computer will spit out an appropriate asset allocation. Hmm. Now, at Merrill Lynch, this particular level of service falls under Merrill Edge. And where many firms use the word robo, right. Merrill Edge calls it guided.
Oh.
Because you answer the question and the computer will guide you to the appropriate asset mm-hmm. allocation. The next level up, which happens to be the second one you asked about, Anne, and that was generic advice. This is the third level, and this is the first time that a human being comes into the equation. Hmm. And typically, this is call centers, you know, 1-800, talk to a human.
Sure.
Type of thing. Mm-hmm. These things are often staffed by young men and women fresh out of college with degrees in finance or economics who have all their licenses. And they're given a toolbox that is limited. The answers they give you are generic, hence the name, generic. They can't get the investor in trouble and they can't get themselves in trouble. But you get a more sophisticated or complicated situation mm-hmm. and you outgrow the generic level. Now, not all firms offer that. We okay. do. We offer that at Merrill Edge. The next step up is personalized advice. Mm-hmm. And personalized advice is where the investing public goes to solve complex issues. Mm-hmm. Can I retire at age 65 and maintain my lifestyle for the rest of my life? Do I need long-term care coverage or can I self-insure? How do I protect my assets in the event of cognitive decline? This is not something you'd go to a generic
right,
place
right.
for.
Right, and so important.
So important. Mm-hmm. You need a person or a team mm-hmm. that focuses on wealth management. Mm-hmm. All right. They get older and their life gets more complicated.
Right.
They move up.
Right.
But you can also see that when they're well into retirement and everything is covered,
right.
they could move down.
Great.
That's where the industry's going. Great question, Anne. Glad you asked.
Great response. Thank you so much for that. And if you'd like to submit your question to Money Matters TV, here's how.
You can have your questions answered on Money Matters. Please go to our website, money-matterstv.com. On our homepage, click on the banner on the right that says, Send Us Your Questions. While you're on our website, you can find information about our host and guests, as well as show notes and links about this show and past shows. Money Matters is also available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, so you can listen to Money Matters while you're on the go. That website address, again, is money, M-O-N-E-Y, dash matters, M-A-T-T-E-R-S, TV.com.
Today we are so happy to have Mary Dougherty with us of Nicole Miller in Philadelphia. And welcome, Mary.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So Pat and I were just talking about some changes in industries, and I just have a sneaking suspicion there's been some changes in the retail industry, so we're happy to talk to you about that today.
Just a little bit, just a tiny bit. No, it was interesting. I loved hearing Pat, both of you speak, because I think what's going on in the financial industry and in a lot of companies mm-hmm. is going on across the board. Right. And in retail, we spoke about we're celebrating our 25th anniversary in Maniac.
Wonderful.
And 22nd thank you at the Bellevue. But a part of why we think we're still here is our commitment to the community mm-hmm. and the fact that we have been very transparent about our contributions and that we have partnered right. with many charities since we opened the doors.
Right.
I mean, the first charity was the film office that asked us to open our doors and let an independent film film in our Mad Young store and have to close for 2 days.
Oh, wow.
And for a business owner, it's really, that's a big ask. But
sure.
When I thought about it, I thought, okay, there's going to be an upside to this. There may mm-hmm. be great PR, mm-hmm. Buzz and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all right, you can't pay me, which that's what the independent film means.
Right.
But I want you to donate to a local charity. And
perfect.
So there was a charity in our backyard called Northlight Community Center. And so they made a donation to Northlight Community Center. I shut my doors down for 2 days.
Right.
We got a credit at the end of the movie. We got invited to the premiere. We
How
got
exciting.
To meet Gabrielle Anwar, Patty Dugastin. There were all these
oh,
great
wow.
people in the film.
Right.
And my staff was thrilled. And it just turned out to be such a valuable win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But that was our first started introduction into
right.
our charitable partnering. And then on to so many different charities in so many different ways, creative ways and innovative ways that we've,
right.
we've partnered.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Now, question. There's a lot of change going on here.
Yes.
What do you see as the future of bricks and mortar, which is what you are,
mm-hmm.
versus the internet?
That's a great question, because everyone is just kind of holding their breath going, okay, who's
yeah.
closing next?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
How
mm-hmm.
are you going to survive? I mean, right. unfortunately, the commercial real estate is not very forgiving
right.
or supportive, and they have to hold a certain rent roll.
Mm-hmm.
And small business owners have to wear so many different hats. Retailers, you're the marketer, your PR, your mm-hmm. events, your
facilities.
Graphic, your facilities, mm-hmm. your employer. And so I think the internet has given us a challenge way beyond anything that we've experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really have to hope that people will support our businesses and come and shop at our stores
mm-hmm.
and want what we have to sell and want that experience. And the other thing is our commitment to the community.
Mm-hmm.
If people don't come into bricks and mortar, we're not going to be here any longer. Not
mm-hmm.
just retail, it's restaurants, it's
mm-hmm.
everybody. But bricks and mortar are important. And I think that experience, I need to touch things. I need to feel things.
Right.
I don't want my groceries delivered. I want to feel my pears.
Exactly.
I want to know that,
yes,
that they're juicy.
Yes.
So I think that it's mm-hmm. really going to be about strong leadership,
mm-hmm.
A commitment to the community, smart business and
mm-hmm.
investing. And then making sure that you give an experience that they want to come back and have to come back. And great advice. You had said you shop at a store where they tell you if you don't look great.
Exactly.
And they're honest. And that's
they're
what
honest.
We call it lose
right.
the sale.
Right.
Do not let someone walk out not looking great.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so it's
wonderful.
Bricks and mortar.
Mm-hmm.
Very important still. But you
mm-hmm.
have to be right on your game. You cannot right. sit back. You cannot expect people just to come in because they like your window. You have to give them an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to have exposure on the internet and visibility.
Right.
And you have to treat your staff well as well. So it's a...
That's what I was going to ask you about the internet specifically. I mean, that was a great, great explanation of how it's affecting the brick and mortar store. Are there other ways that the internet has changed aside from the fact that you can, you know, sit in your jammies and order up some clothes? But, you know, are there other... Do they come into the store and... You know, try to find the coupon code on them. Like, you know, how has that all changed?
You know,
because
when
if you're celebrating your 25th anniversary, that was all pre-internet, right? So you've
absolutely.
Been there from the beginning watching
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it there's always been something in retail that's been challenging. There was the day of the big discounter, you
right.
know, when Sims and Daffy's
oh,
opened.
Sure.
So then we had people coming in and
yeah.
comparing prices.
Mm-hmm.
The internet has just given, it's just such an open season.
Right.
And you can go online and you can get anything cheaper.
So,
and you can absolutely shop.
You mentioned Sims. If I can
yeah.
interrupt you, what was their tagline? It was an educated consumer, but this is almost like an empowered consumer
oh,
is
yes.
what you're describing.
And everyone has a smartphone.
Sure.
So it's
yes.
not like a select group of people can go
mm-hmm.
online and shop.
Right.
And we have people that come in. You can also rent things. So you have Rent the Runway, which
oh,
is another
right.
challenge
right.
because... Women are now, I wouldn't rent anything.
Mm-hmm.
I want to pull the tag off. There's
right.
nothing more exciting to me than taking off a tag.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people that do, mm-hmm. they rent, they shop price, And what we say to them is, you know, we don't want to qualify anyone's money. We don't know what's
sure.
going on in
Absolutely.
Someone's life.
Yep.
If they need that bargain, then mm-hmm. God bless them. But mm-hmm. what I remind them is that if you do shop online, if you go on the website, if mm-hmm. you rent something, what you're doing is that we won't be here.
Right.
All of the businesses like ours that go above and beyond mm-hmm. Will not be able to be sustained if everybody just comes in and
right.
window shops and then orders online. We have no benefit.
Agreed.
And you have two great locations, Manayunk and mm-hmm. the Bellevue downtown. Is it a different market? Are you catering to different types of clients? You know, what's the advantage one over the other? Is it just two totally different markets?
It's again another great question, because people always say, you know, do you just buy the same things for the same stores?
Right.
And we don't. We have two very different consumer. We have in Manayunk, it is more sportswear. And a lot of people only think of Nicole Miller for dresses, but mm-hmm. she designs an amazing sportswear collection and denim and easy pickup items. So it's mm-hmm. more of a mainline customer who will buy something for the Kentucky Derby or for the Radnor Hunt, mm-hmm. but she'll also pick up a couple pieces to bring down to her shore house.
Okay.
In Center City, our customers are professional women, a lot of them. They're in for a conference, they have an office in the city, they have events, they don't have time. Mm-hmm. So we actually offer a lot of services, personal shopping. We'll yeah. clean out someone's mm-hmm. closet. I advised a woman who was going to be speaking at a conference, emceeing a conference for 4 days, and it was with other professional women. And she said she wanted to look powerful, but she didn't want to look like she was trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
She had a tendency to always gravitate towards black, but she wanted to integrate some color.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted advice on her hair, her makeup, her jewelry. So we will provide services like that. Mm-hmm. Another friend.
So important to branding, personal branding.
Absolutely, because you are your brand.
Right.
And people are so visual now.
Mm-hmm. And not available on the internet.
Right.
No, exactly.
No, exactly. So again, that goes back to the personal experience, the service.
Love that.
Yeah. Yes.
So what are you seeing in terms of, well, kind of, I'll put my business hat back on, because I could stay in this world forever. But with my business hat on, what are you seeing in terms of hiring challenges? I know we're in a very tight labor market right now, and a lot of companies are finding it hard to not only attract but also mm-hmm. retain their employees. Do you have similar types of challenges? Are they different? Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you asked that, because I think retail is one of those industries that's kind of forgotten in the mm-hmm. sense that there isn't a degree in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have kids that go to colleges and wonderful institutions that are parents, or they are spending
mm-hmm.
you know, $50,000-$70,000 a year with a you know $300,000 tab at the end, and if they have a job as a graphic designer at $28,000 and they could work in retail at $38,000, they're going to want them to take the graphic design,
sure.
because retail, unfortunately, because it doesn't have a degree. It has a connotation of you're just doing it until you go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately for us, because of our brand, because of our visibility and our reputation in the city, we've been able to hire and retain wonderful staff. I mean, I don't
Excellent.
Know what I'd do without them. And one of my,
nice
our manager at the Bellevue will say to everyone, I'm here because of the commitment to the community. I'm here because mm-hmm. I love my customers. I love mm-hmm. the brand. And I love working with our team. And so I'm fortunate that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope someday
mm-hmm.
Some schools start to have a degree
right.
in retail, and it's marketing, it's PR, it's events, it's branding, it's
mm-hmm.
merchandising, it's buying.
Right.
It's everything.
Supply chain.
And for the right
it,
person,
right.
it's wonderful.
Exactly.
And for the wrong person, it's a nightmare. But
but it sounds like a very viable option.
Oh, absolutely.
For, people who are taking the college path and people who aren't, so that's wonderful.
Absolutely.
And I can't believe this, but we have time for one more question. Is there anything else you wanted to ask?
I wanted to talk about the fact that you made the cover of Philadelphia Style.
Well,
that's pretty impressive.
Very impressive. Nicole is an amazing designer. I've been very blessed that we've been together over 30 years, and I started as a wholesaler and the two retail stores. And she is coming in tomorrow. I've donated my archives and collection to Drexel University's Costume Design Museum. So there's an opening tomorrow night, officially, on Friday, and it'll run through the end of August. And then she'll be in our Manayunk store on Friday from 12 to 2, celebrating our birthday, celebrating the cover, celebrating the retrospective, and just fashion philanthropy in Philadelphia.
Love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
Women in the know that want to look right, best be there.
Absolutely.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And thank you again for inviting me. This was really a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us today, and Pat, for you being here. And thank you for joining the show. Please tune in for our next episode, where we will have Matt Handel, CEO of Express Cells. And again, want to thank both of you for being with us today. And remember, expect great things from everything you do. Thank you.